Welcome to another episode of the Neon Movie Bunker. I'm John Robinson.
And I'm Larry Stanley.
And we're here to talk about movies.
And Star Wars Celebration.
Yes.
It just happened.
Yes. We both attended it.
Yes. And all sorts of interesting things were announced. Let's start with the biggie.
Episode 9.
Mm-hmm.
The Rise of Skywalker.
Yes. A panel was had featuring J.J. Abrams, John Boyega, Daisy Ridley,
Oscar Isaac, Anthony Daniels,
Billy D. Williams,
Jonas Suotomo,
and, of course, the host with the most,
Stephen Colbert.
Stephen Colbert, as the moderator there, making sure that all the important questions were asked.
And even one or two of them got answered.
Yeah, which is impressive.
Yeah.
And then there was a special surprise guest after the trailer was dropped.
Yes.
Ian McDiarmid.
Yes.
Returning to the stage and to the series as Emperor Sheev Palpatine, also known as Darth Sidious.
Yes.
And, Kathleen Kennedy was also on stage.
Yes.
And, so yeah, John, I know you've got thoughts and feelings on this, so I want to hear some of them. Let the record show that John just giggled and shook like a schoolboy. If a schoolboy were a 6'2" or 6'3" tall man wearing all black and otherwise scowling at me.
I'm very, very happy with this trailer.
Some have said that the plan was from the start with this new trilogy was to bring Palpatine back. Do you buy that?
No.
Neither do I. I don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, if it turns out well, great. If it turns out bad, well, that sucks. But either way, Ian McDiarmid's fun.
Yeah.
He's a really good actor, and it's great to see him back in that role.
Mm-hmm.
Or rather, it will be great to see him back in that role. Let's talk about the trailer, the other parts of that trailer.
Okay.
Right? We have, as so many others have noted, it opens up with somebody breathing heavily in the desert yet again.
Yeah.
This time we're back to Rey, and she's prepping for a TIE fighter, or an interceptor, TIE interceptor that's barreling down at her.
Yep.
Ignites the lightsaber that she rebuilt, does a backflip.
Over the
fighter. It's pretty damn sweet visual. Yeah. And let's see here, what other tidbits do we get? We get Rey and Leia embracing.
Yes.
Somebody taking a look at the medals that were, or the medal that was given to either Han or Luke at the end of A New Hope.
Mm-hmm.
We get Lando Calrissian back behind
the wheel of the Millennium Falcon.
For the first time since Empire Strikes Back. Oh no, I'm
Jedi.
Sorry. Jedi. Empire Strikes Back was the first time he and Chewie teamed up behind the controls.
Yeah.
Which is the case again.
Yeah.
And see here, there's the group of them on a skiff on a desert planet.
Mm-hmm.
We see the group of them on an as of yet unidentified planet. Could
yes.
be one of two.
Yes.
Well, it could be, actually, it could be any planet, really.
Yeah.
With a large chunk of the remains of a Death Star.
Yes.
So, we can go into some wild conjecture and speculation here. I think that's kind of what people talking on the internet about movies are supposed to do at this point.
Okay.
Right?
Well, conject.
All right. Palpatine's not coming back to life.
Okay.
I don't think that's happening.
Okay.
I do think that we're going to get to see Force, because we got to see a Force ghost directly interact with the world in 8.
Mm-hmm.
If Yoda can do it,
Palpatine can do it.
Palpatine, yeah, exactly. So, he doesn't have to come be alive to be a threat.
Right.
Which is really kind of impressive and awesome. Then, there's the question of, who's the title referring to?
Yeah. Because
I have a guess.
Because we kind of ran out of Skywalkers.
Right. And Ben Solo.
Yeah.
Could be him.
Mm-hmm.
He could refuse the name of Kylo Ren and Solo and decide to become Ben Skywalker. and find a new gray to walk down.
Okay.
I'm not buying that.
I'm not either. I think a lot of what the latter stages of The Last Jedi were about were to close off that pretty much forever.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that JJ is going to do massive retconning of episode 8.
Yeah.
I don't think Rey's parents are going to be revealed to be important.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Ben's going to be returning to being Ben Solo. I think we have a pretty good idea of those characters have spent the time between now and the start of Rise of Skywalker doubling down on where they were at the end of Last Jedi, I think.
Yeah.
And we see a bit of that in Kylo Ren putting together his mask again.
Yeah.
We see a bit of that in Rey having to reassemble the lightsaber. So, could it be Luke?
We know Mark Hamill's in it.
Yeah. The audio that is featured in this is Luke Skywalker giving some new information to Rey.
Mm-hmm.
Or rather, some encouragement to him. I don't think it's Luke.
Okay.
You see, there was another guest at Celebration.
Yeah.
And I think he makes an appearance in the film.
Hayden Christensen?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think that Hayden Christensen will appear as a living character in episode 9. That's my prediction.
Wow.
Yeah. Or rather, an animate character.
Interesting distinction.
Yeah. Well, there was some concept art done a while for, I think it was episode 7, which had Anakin's Force Ghost coming to be, you know, prominent for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And he would start as Anakin and shift to half Darth, full Darth, and then back.
Hmm.
And it's a cool idea.
Yeah.
I don't know that seeing Anakin as a Force Ghost
is enough.
Really counts as rising.
Right.
I think that, well, let's talk mythology and comparative cultures and religions for a moment. And
whatever you say, Joseph Campbell.
Sure. And there's more than a little bit of borrowing from a certain major religion for the character of Anakin Skywalker. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You have a virgin birth.
Yep.
You have somebody who ascends to a certain amount of notoriety.
Yeah.
And then descends into a hellish state.
Mm-hmm.
Then leaves. I don't see why. I mean, at this point, why not have Anakin Skywalker have a second coming? Why not?
It could work.
It could. If the writing is there.
Yeah.
And the acting is there. And the directing is there. And it's all pulled together well. Hey, I'm down. I've seen sillier concepts in movies. And they work really well. So I'm okay with the idea of Anakin. That's my prediction, anyways. Anakin Skywalker will come back to life and will serve as a potential third act wrench in the works.
Hmm. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see in
December.
We'll see in 8 months.
Mm-hmm. In 9 months, I'm sorry, not 9 months, 7 months, in the wrong direction, we'll get the chance to see something else.
Oh.
The Mandalorian was another rather prominent
yes
item. Kind of the flagship of the Disney Plus offering.
The flagship of the Star Wars branch of the Disney Plus offering.
Okay. Fair enough. I think the Star Wars branch of the Disney Plus offering is kind of a flagship of the Disney Plus offering. And
yeah. I unfortunately did not get to see the footage that was shown in the panel.
Neither. But
I've heard description of it.
Oh, please.
Very Western inspired, unsurprisingly. IG-88 being a badass.
You know who's voicing it too, right?
No.
Writer, director, actor, comedian, Taika Waititi.
Ha!
Yeah.
Neat. And I heard Salacious Crumb is about to be barbecued.
About damn time.
So, but yeah, it's, it looks like it'll be good. And that leads us into another bit of news.
Well, I don't want to leave The Mandalorian quite yet.
Well, you talk about it then.
Because as part of the Disney Plus offering, they're not giving a full season all at once.
They're not just dumping it for binging.
No. You have to wait every week for another episode.
Okay.
That's pretty damn true.
Yeah.
Because that means they can have this one property to really keep people going. And I think that is, like I said, that's shrewd as hell.
On the subject of Disney Plus, though not necessarily The Mandalorian or Star Wars.
Okay.
They announced pricing this week.
Yeah, they did.
$6.99 a month.
Okay.
Or $69.99 a year.
That's not bad at all.
Yeah. It's really, really not bad at all.
Yeah, that's well, Netflix, it was nice to know you. Good.
Yeah, you know who said at Netflix it was nice to know you?
Lots of people.
Wall Street.
Mm.
Netflix took an $8 billion hit in market capitalization when this announcement was made.
Well, and that just means that they have to, either they'll have to swing for the fences with some sort of comeback, which they could do.
Yeah.
Or sell themselves. Either one is entirely possible.
Yeah, I we'll see.
Yeah, the streaming concept is not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And the blurring of the lines between film and television is going to continue.
True.
Until it's all just a download into your
cerebral cortex.
Uh-huh. There was yet another trailer shown at Celebration. This one was for the return of the animated series Clone Wars.
Yes.
That's really all the information I have.
That's about as far as I care to go.
Okay, there we go then. So, dear listeners, what do you think? What's your theory on episode 9? What do you think of all the pictures that we posted on the site? What do you think of the site?
Yeah.
Let us know.
We want to hear from you.
That's right. We most certainly do.
Mail@neonmoviebunker.com.
Of course, that's not the only way to get in touch with us.
Facebook.com/neonmoviebunker.
You can also find us on
Twitter.com/NeonMovieBunker or @NeonMovieBunker or @JohnNMB.
Or @LRANeonMB.
Places.
Things.
Please subscribe.
Mm-hmm.
Subscribe in Apple Podcasts.
Or Google Podcasts.
Or Stitcher.
Or Spotify. And of course, that site we mentioned, all the shows are there too.
www.NeonMovieBunker.com.
So, John.
Yes.
You saw a couple of films.
I did.
There's one you're going to talk about.
Yes.
And then you also saw
High Life.
High Life, which is one you said I should see.
Yes.
But please, tell me about
Peter Lynn. Yes. Written and directed by Mike Lee. Stars Rory Kinnear and a bunch of other actors who, frankly, you've never heard of.
That's promising.
It tells the story of the, well, in Manchester in approximately 1817.
Uh-huh.
Not long after the Battle of Waterloo in Belgium, the boys who were left came marching home. And what they were coming home to was Well, an ugly world. An ugly existence.
Okay.
It is the aftermath of the Battle of Waterloo, and the boys come marching home to England, and what they come home to is a pretty miserable existence. Industrialization has taken over.
All right.
And in the city of Manchester, it is textiles that are king.
Okay.
And working on mechanical looms all day for a pittance. Only landholders have the vote.
Yeah.
And Manchester doesn't even have a representative in Parliament.
Okay.
And so there's a reform movement on.
One would hope.
Universal suffrage. In this case, meaning one man, one vote, meaning one man,
right.
One vote. More annual parliaments and just more representation in parliament. And the phrase liberty or death comes up.
Hmm.
And the ruling class is perturbed by this.
I can't imagine why.
Primarily because of what happened in France in 1789.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yes. And what this movie depicts are a series of escalating speeches. Some on the floor of Parliament, some in back rooms of London, some in Manchester, on the subject of freedom and seeking to redress these grievances. And it all comes to a head on a day in August, a Monday in August, a work day.
Boy.
But they don't go to work. They go to St. Peter's Green in Manchester. And listen to a speech by Henry Hunt, one of the leading reformers, who is particularly dangerous as he is himself a landowner. Well, the long and short of it is they set mounted soldiers on this crowded green and it turns into a massacre. I love Mike Leigh movies. This is known.
Yeah, it's been a theme of any time you speak of a Mike Leigh movie on the show.
Yes. I love this one. It's spectacular. It's a chapter in history I knew nothing about.
Okay.
And one comes out of this ready to revolt. Even today. I would not recommend this as somebody's first exposure to Mike Leigh.
No?
No.
What would you recommend?
Topsy Turvy.
Okay.
Or Naked. But this is advanced film watching. Because it is so. The text, the dialogue is taken directly from speeches of the day. And it can be overwhelming. It's a bit like listening to Shakespeare.
Okay.
In that you're catching the words, but the language is so elevated
mm-hmm.
and heightened that you need to let some processing time between what you're hearing and realizing what they're saying.
Gotcha. All right, so this is something that would benefit from a rewatch.
Perhaps, yeah. It's also pretty long. It's about 2.5 hours. But that's okay. As St. Roger said, no bad movie is ever too short and no good one is ever long enough. It's, yeah, and it looks spectacular. Not just the cinematography by Dick Pope, but the costumes and the grime and the...
Yeah.
And the one scene that is set in the textile mill while it's working will have you questioning your sanity very quickly because of the noise.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
You know, it's... just from the noise of the looms working made me at least think, my God, how did these people do this for 12 hours a day for, you know, a farthing or however much they were making.
Right.
It's got lessons about the abuse of power. It's got lessons about history, of course. But it's not exactly didactic.
Okay.
It's because I've seen some criticisms of it that it is too long and there are many portions that could be cut to trim it down to a more manageable length.
Well, how long is it?
Like 2.5 hours.
That's not that bad. Absurd.
And what that misses is that it all brings in texture to what we're seeing. We see one of the boys who came home from Waterloo staggering his way home and basically going through PTSD,
mm-hmm.
which they didn't even have the name Shell Shock for at that point.
Yeah.
We see meetings of a women's reform group not looking for suffrage for themselves by any means, but just to support the men. It's a great scene because we've got one of the leaders of this women's group giving a speech and one of the women in the audience stands up and says, I don't know what you're saying. I can't understand what you're saying. Because she is talking in that very eloquent rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
So the speaker stops, thinks for a second, and de-escalates her speech, and the woman in the audience is, oh, okay. Now I get it. It's full of these touches of just what life was like then, and yeah, it's a really powerful piece of work. This is probably something we'll be talking about in December, possibly even twice.
Well then.
Peter Lou in theaters now. See it.
Yeah, it sounds to me like this is something of a timely film as well.
Yes it is.
Just the part that you described right there with the woman and the speaker. I can see some modern day parallels. That, yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sold.
All right.
Coming out this week on Blu-ray and DVD is the documentary Master of Dark Shadows. It takes a look at the daytime soap opera Dark Shadows and how it came to be, what it was originally intended as, and the impact that it's had on the world. Directed by David Gregory, narrated by Ian McShane, we start with a bit of background as to what was on television at the time. Now, this was way back when there were three networks.
Wow.
No cable.
Was one of them the DuMont Network?
No. No, this was... If you got that joke, write in, explain it, and you'll win a prize. I'm not sure what yet. I just want to know if somebody out there got that joke. Anyways, there were three networks, and one of them, ABC, was pretty behind the eight ball as far as ratings and money were concerned. And so they were willing to be a little bit more adventurous in the sort of programming that they'd put together. One thing that they hadn't considered was giving Dan Curtis a time slot during the day. He was doing sports stuff for them, primarily up until this point. And he had an idea for a program. He was pitching it as an evening program, a thriller of sorts, about a young woman who goes to this estate to serve as nanny for these children. And things in this house were more sinister than they initially appeared.
Okay.
And the station said, well, what if you were to try doing that as a soap? As a daytime soap?
Hmm.
And his response was, no. Well, maybe for this amount of money. And they said, yeah, no, well, okay. And so Dark Shadows came to be. And the thing is, it was put on in a time slot where kids were starting to come home. And so you had that younger audience to appeal to, as well as the primary audience, which was housewives at the time.
Yeah.
There's a third segment of the population that they mentioned was just waking up at that time. They say, you know, a lot of prostitutes and druggies were waking up about that time and having their breakfast while watching our show, which was apparently evidenced by some of the fan mail that they got. But how many programs can you think of that appealed to housewives, children, and druggies? Other than, you know, HR Puffin stuff.
That's exactly where I was going.
Yeah, I kind of figured. But Dark Shadows was something that could do that. It had a certain element of
crossover appeal.
Yeah, yeah. It had the soaps. It had that sort of, did you hear about what Mary was doing? Sort of gossipy feel to it. But it also had vampires and werewolves and ghosts. And it was pretty damn cool. Ultimately, it introduced the character of Barnabas Collins.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, he was initially intended to be a short-term character, but he kind of ended up being the star of the show.
Took over.
This documentary does a very good job of detailing the genesis, even the pre-genesis of the show, through to the tail end of it. You get interviews with surviving cast members, you've got interviews with Dan Curtis in there, you've got archival footage of the show itself, some of which was because it was shot live, you see. And so when they were rolling the credits over footage of the locations, or rather the studio, you'd see some of the actors leaving half in costume. And so it was an interesting kind of, slapdash isn't the right term, but it was
Shoestring,
and it had kind of a pre-punk rock vibe to it. You know, this is a soap opera, but it's a soap opera that doesn't really give a shit about what your opinion of a soap opera is.
And what it should be.
Right. There's an interesting omission, if you ask me, in this documentary, and a wise one. Nobody from a certain adaptation is approached.
No Tim Burton.
No Tim Burton.
No Johnny Depp.
No Johnny Depp. No Eva Green.
Mm-hmm.
None of those who appeared in that. And
did I mention the 90s revival with Ben Cross?
I don't recall them mentioning that.
That was prime time.
Mm-hmm. That wasn't bad either.
Yeah.
Overall, I would say if you're a fan of the Dark Shadows series, or if you're curious about it, this is something that you'll definitely want to give a spin. It I wasn't necessarily big on the show itself. I enjoyed the show, but just the concept of blending the supernatural and a soap opera really appealed to me in there. And to see the behind the scenes mechanics of that was really a treat. The Blu-ray is available now. It's a relatively brief documentary, about a little under 90 minutes, but it's fun time.
All right. So, listeners, did you see Peterloo or did you see Master of Dark Shadows? Please let us know what you thought. mail@neonmoviebunker.com.
In the meantime,
DVDs and Blu-rays.
That's right. And coming out this week on DVD and Blu-ray and 4K is M. Night Shyamalan's latest, Glass.
Yes.
Which I enjoyed. It's not high art. It's not his best work. But it is a fitting cap to that story.
Okay. Also coming on DVD and Blu-ray and probably 4K. I didn't check. The Kid Who Would Be King. Really fun kind of throwbacky kids movie that takes on Arthurian legend and brings it into the late 2010s.
First of two films this year to do that. Hellboy.
Yeah. I haven't seen Hellboy yet.
I have.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say Kid Who Would Be King is probably the better one.
It's definitely the one that would appeal more to you.
Okay.
I think you'd be so annoyed by Hellboy.
Okay. I don't intend to see it, so. Yeah. Got anything for us to avoid this week?
Yes and no. There's a movie that's not good available this week on home video, but I had so much fun watching it in theaters that I'm going to watch it again on home video. And like I said, it's not a good movie. You've said it's not a good movie, but it's a crazy enough movie that it's fun in its own demented Keanu Reeves way. Replicas is... it's going to be the subject of a riff tracks. It's going to be the subject of so much... it's going to be a cult film, is basically what's going to happen. It's going to become a cult film 10 years down the line.
Quite possibly.
It's going to be something that people gather to watch and enjoy for every reason but what's on screen.
Fair. Hey, Ellery.
Hey, John.
Let's go to the movies.
Okie dokie. What are we going to go see?
First on the list of things to see right now is Peterloo.
Okay.
For all the reasons I talked about earlier in the show.
That makes sense.
Next most of things to see right now, still in some theaters, is Captain Marvel.
Yeah. Damn good time.
Yep. And last most of things to see right now, you can do worse than Dumbo.
Okay. If you're going to stay home and pop something to your home video player of choice, be it DVD, Blu-ray, or streaming, the first thing I'm going to recommend to you is Vice, the look at Dick Cheney and his career in politics. Follow that up with Bumblebee, which is just a fun kind of E.T.-esque Amblin adventure.
Okay.
And The Kid Who Would Be King would be a solid option here. Glass would be a solid option here. But neither of those are in my notes. Replicas is. So I'm going to say Replicas. Because it's just... it's our front runner for not good but awesome.
Yeah. Bet it is. Want to take the opportunity to mention our email address one more time, mail@neonmoviebunker.com. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/neonmoviebunker. We are on Twitter at neonmoviebunker. I'm at JohnNMB.
I am at LRANeonMB.
And, of course, please subscribe to the show in Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or Stitcher or Spotify. Or just hit up our RSS feed and find it that way. And, of course, our new and improved and freshly redesigned website is available at www.neonmoviebunker.com. Let us know what you think of that.
Yep.
And so we come to the end of another episode of the Neon Movie Bunker. This week's episode is produced by Ella Ray Stanek. The executive producer is Kate Walpole. The junior executive producer is Maggie Stanek. The theme song is by
Dr. Awkward and the Monkey Man Trio.
So until next time, I'm John Robinson.
And I'm Ella Ray Stanek.
And we'll probably see you at the movies.